I've now entered the people who are marginalized, and it broke my heart because I'm like, wow, now I've actually become people living with disability, and this really does suck. There's only so much begging you can do, you know. It's like my hands and legs are tied and I'm being told, no, you sit down there and rest. Wait to be given whatever you're given. And that broke my heart because then I was not in charge of my life.
Hi, I'm Kim Chakaneta, and this is The Comb, a BBC World Service original podcast. Each week I comb the continent for stories that matter. In this episode, a life-changing diagnosis. What happens when your world starts to go dark?
This is The Comb.
Ye ni The Comb.
The Comb, no.
Ni The Comb.
The Comb.
Hello. Hi, Eve. I'm Kim. How are you?
I'm very fine, thank you.
Nice to meet you.
This is my niece.
Hello.
I met Eve at her sister's house in Nairobi. Eve's been living here for the past few months. She moved here after losing her eyesight, and she's still getting used to navigating her way around the space.
No problem. Should we go this way?
Just to your right.
That way. Perfect. Further side.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm really gross.
Eve's identity has two distinct parts. The Eve before she lost her sight.
I was an entrepreneur and was a film producer by profession.
And Eve now, the newly blind girl, as she calls herself on social media.
Hey peoples, welcome back to the Blind Girl Experience. It's Eve Kibare, your host, as usual. And today I'm going to do...
When I first heard Eve's story, it stopped me in my tracks. While the world was grappling with COVID, she fell sick with a different mystery illness. And within a few short months, her life had changed completely. We'll get there. But first, I want to get to know Eve herself a bit better.
I grew up with my sister and my mother. I was, I think the biggest problem, would say problem in quotes, because when you grow up, you realize it's not actually a problem. I was called a noisemaker.
What would you be doing, Eve? Why were you called a noisemaker?
Telling stories. I always have stories to tell. I'm the kind of person who just loves talking to people and making fun and, you know, being jokey about situations. So that's...
This matches the Eve I'm meeting today. She can chat for hours with 100 different anecdotes full of details she clearly loves to share.
I loved writing stories from primary school. I think I was among the best in composition writing because I can fantasize, I can create a scene and people think...
So Eve was a happy, chatty kid, but her confidence took a hit in school when work started to get a bit more serious and people were thinking about their futures.
The academics just was not my strong suit. I started feeling like a failure. And so by the time I'm finishing high school, I'm like, well, I don't think I'll amount to much.
Eve did find a way forward for herself, recognizing that her talents lay in storytelling and creativity. She pursued an arts route, studying film and theatre. She eventually managed to manoeuvre into a job in film production, where she could let her rich imagination run free. But a few years ago, Eve decided to make a change.
I decided to start an online business. So I started a lingerie store. Mm-hmm. So selling lingerie online to working...
Shifting from employee to entrepreneur, Eve's vision was an online store which could stock lingerie designed specifically for African body types.
I stayed 6 months without having any clients come on board. Like, I'm online, but nobody's buying from me. Like... Am I doing the right thing? And then the 6th month I get a client and I'm like, whew. But that money you're making is so little compared to what you've been doing for the last 6 months. You have to just find a way to convince yourself that you're doing the right thing. Mm.
So you had a big professional vision. What about a personal vision? What did you imagine for your own life?
Kids, I was excited about that. But it had gotten to a point in life where relationships weren't making any sense because, well, the dating pool was just, oof, chaotic.
Oh, same. Chaotic how?
You know, it's like one relationship and then you go to another relationship and you're like, yo, what's going on? Like, there was a time we were asking amongst my few friends, is it that we are in the wrong side of the street? Do we need to move? Because we seem to be dating very savage people.
And there was one other big thing on Eve's list, travel.
I also wanted to travel now for leisure instead of always traveling for work, because then I could be able to see the world from a different perspective.
And if there was a wish list of countries that you wanted to go to and visit, what would those countries be?
Well, I wanted to go to Seychelles. I wanted to go to South Africa because I have relatives there. And I wanted to go to Tunisia because the ladies...
Eve's list goes on and on. The States, South America.
No list.
I know. But you have the whole, you have the rest of the world, the life too.
This is true.
Yeah.
In 2020, things changed for you dramatically, Eve. Can you tell me, when did you first start to feel something wasn't right?
Around April, I was feeling my body was lethargic. I thought, maybe it's the COVID, you know, anxiety, staying in the house. I'd feel very tired. And then I started feeling like my phone is too bright. So I'd reduce the brightness to zero. And then sleeping in my bed became very uncomfortable. And then now my neck had started becoming very stiff. So I couldn't, I'm like, am I the one who just stopped knowing how to sleep? Or what is this? So I even commented to some of my neighbors. They're like, oh, well, you need to change your mattress. So you see, everyone has, like, somehow there were always solutions. I thought it was me because I'm doing a lot of walking and the way the sun is bright and shining, I'm thinking maybe it's the sun, you know, it's too bright. Maybe it's the walking, maybe it's the panic, the anxiety of COVID setting into our country. And now, because everything you're watching, people are commenting, the state of the world has changed. So there's a lot going on. You know, you never think it's you're sick. You're thinking maybe I've added weight, maybe I need to jog. So you jog, then the next day you can't wake up. You're like, oh my God, who told me to jog? That was hard. So I even told my sister, I don't know why I feel like I'm always tired. I'd feel really tired. I just sleep.
Okay.
And now the headache started coming. They'd come like once a week, twice a week. But when I sleep it off, when I wake up the next morning, I'm okay. I'm fine. So I'm like, okay, clearly the cure is sleeping. Maybe I'm just tired.
Then Eve started to have issues with her vision. It was in and out at first, but it got worse.
My screen was too bright, my TV was too bright, so I was now tampering with settings, but it's all happening at different times. So even now sleeping, the morning light was affecting me, so I started sleeping with, what are they called? The eye.
The mask.
Sleep, yeah. Because I didn't want to see that light. It was too bright for me. Yet it never bothered me before. I was like, yo, what's wrong with my body?
By a cruel twist of badly timed luck, this was all happening just as Eve's lingerie business was starting to pick up. The same lockdown, which she thought might be behind her health issues, was prompting people to order online, which was ideal for her business model.
I was like, okay, then maybe it's because I was so used to being in the house for so long without orders, and now there are orders, so my body is readjusting.
But the problem was growing and soon became impossible to ignore. Eve was planning to go visit her sister at work to surprise her on her birthday. The day before, she had a headache like usual, so she followed the pattern she'd got used to. Go to bed, sleep it off. It will be fine when you wake up. Only this time, the headache didn't go away.
It feels like your whole entire forehead, there's just pain that's hanging on, like it's just pain and then it's covering your entire head. It's like a wrap of pain. So it's like your head is just heavy. You feel like you need to squint your eyes for it to go away, but there's nothing that works. And then now the neck is stiff to the point that on the sides, it's now paining from here. And then the whole entire head is covered till the forehead with an intense pain.
Finally, after days of struggle, Eve realized it was time to go to hospital. But because of a COVID curfew that was in place, Eve asked a friend to pick her up first thing the next morning. Luckily, he had a different idea.
Like, Eve, you don't sound well. I'm coming to get you right now. I'm like, really? What about the curfew? He's like, Eve, you're not feeling well. We don't care about the curfew. We'll explain. We have to rush you to hospital. Otherwise, I would have waited till the next day. I'm not sure if I would have made it, because at that point, I was not very sure of myself. I was in too much pain, and I was too tired to do anything.
After all of that, when Eve finally got to the hospital, she was assessed and told she was suffering from a bacterial infection.
I was like, oh, that's what is causing all this. 5 days, I'll be good. So I didn't think much of it.
Eve went home with antibiotics and painkillers, feeling relieved. But the seemingly simple solution didn't work.
The painkillers didn't work. Even leaning like this, anything that touches my body is painful.
And then, a much scarier development.
Now, Friday is when I woke up in the morning, and then I found my eyes glassy. And I'm like, this is not right.
When you say glassy?
It's like someone puts a glass.
Uh-huh.
Like a drinking glass, and puts them, when you see through that sort of glass, you don't see clearly. It's foggy. I can see stuff. I can see that is a TV cabinet. That's a chair. That's a calendar. But I can't tell the details on the calendar.
What was going through your mind at the time?
I actually thought it was, I woke up in the wrong nightmare. So I was like, nope. I went back to bed. I was like, I don't think this is right.
When her sister called, Eve complained to her again about the pain and the lack of sleep, but she didn't mention her eyesight. She said she was hoping it was perhaps just because she was sleepy. She thought it would go away. It wasn't a detail she was ready to say out loud yet.
So I went back to bed. Then now at 9 o'clock, I woke up. And then I opened my eyes and was like, oh my God, this is not a nightmare. This is actually it. Like, this is something that's happening to my eyes. I was so heartbroken, so, like, it's like the energy you have, it just slipped off. I'm like, how is this happening? How am I getting sicker and I'm on medication? If I was not on medication, I would blame it on my stubbornness of not going to hospital. But honestly, right now, I went to hospital. They gave me medicine. This time I wasn't stubborn. I did. And I was so angry. And then my mom called and I broke down.
At this point, although heartbroken and frustrated to the point of anger that she still wasn't getting better and actually seemed to be getting sicker, Eve still wasn't contemplating the idea that her loss of vision could be permanent. She spent 6 weeks in hospital where they finally found what had been causing her issues for so long.
It was a blood clot in the main vein in my brain.
With the focus on her broader health, Eve's sight became a secondary issue, as she assumed it would improve as the blood clot was dealt with. But when she was back home, it got worse again.
Things started getting darker. You feel like a fog is falling. It's like a ring, a dark fog is forming around the eyes.
For months, Eve had believed that once her general health was back to normal, her eyes would follow suit. Now, with things getting worse, she finally found an ophthalmologist who was able to give her a more realistic explanation of what was happening.
She's the one who was able to speak to me, like, genuinely and tell me what was going on. She said, there's a high chance that I might not be able to fix this because I also don't know what exactly this is, because it's not a problem with your eyes. There's a problem going on in your brain.
The ophthalmologist, along with a neurologist, eventually determined that it was pressure built up by the blood clot, which was causing Eve's eyes to fail. The hope was that once the blood clot was gone, the pressure would be relieved. There would be a chance that things would go back to normal. But the blood clot was shrinking too slowly, so it was decided to operate, to put a shunt in Eve's brain as the quickest way to reduce the pressure, giving the best chance of her eyesight recovering. Eve was told there were three potential outcomes for her.
There's a likelihood that your sight may come back, but not to 100%. And there's a chance that your sight may not get any better. And there's also a chance that your sight may go down. Because when something has been on under pressure for a long time, when you release, they can only know when the pressure is released, how the optic nerve will behave. So that's what they did.
After the surgery, Eve waited anxiously.
Nothing has changed. And then we came back home. Monday, I can see my mom's dress. Friday, I don't know what color she's wearing. And then I started realizing that I don't think I'm getting my sight back. I understood it was the third. It was not the first, neither the second, it was the third. I think I'm actually losing it. It's confusing. There's nothing you can do. It's one of those helpless situations where there's nothing you can do about it. Mm-hmm. And it's not your fault. At that time, you've used up all the coins you had. You've used up all the money that people have donated to your cause. And so at this point, when you're being told this, you're like, you know, there's nothing else I can do. Mm-hmm. So as much as I was feeling sad and shocked, I also had to remind myself that it's nobody's fault. Bad things happen to good people too.
Now Eve was living with a ticking clock, knowing as her eyesight deteriorated that it was only going to get worse until she finally reached permanent darkness. The emotional implications were enormous, but there were also urgent practical considerations.
The first things I started thinking of was my independence. I was crushed because now I have to move out. Now I have to move out of my apartment. I don't know if I'll ever be able to live alone again. And I had mentioned that I love my space, but now I have to live with someone. For the rest of my life, I know I may have to live with somebody. I still am not sure if I'll be able to run my business. And I realized that I've now entered the people who are marginalized. And it broke my heart because I'm like, wow, now I've actually become people living with disability, and this really does suck because there's nothing I can do about it. So there's a way the system is set up and it's unfair, but I'm close to the bottom barrel people in my own country. And I had a whole life ahead of me, and the way I'd set up my life because I was independently driven. Now I may have to change the way I work. And at that time I was feeling very hopeless and helpless. So the only thing I could do was just live for the day.
I've tried to imagine if I was in that situation, facing the rapid loss of my sight forever, what would I most want to see? Faces of loved ones, favorite places, spectacular views. Even looking at my own reflection, knowing that this face is going to age, but I won't see it happen. The reality for Eve was that time was so short, her eyesight already so poor, and she was for so long clinging to the hope that it was temporary, that priorities became highly practical. Downloading the music she wanted to listen to, locating important possessions. Now Eve is still adapting to life as a permanently blind person, and learning and relearning what she used to take for granted.
I can't be able to cook the way I used to cook. I can't operate my laptop as efficiently as I used to operate it before. I can't wash clothes the way I used to wash them before. I can't go wherever I want to go. I can't use public transport. I can't go anywhere alone, that is.
One of the hardest changes has been how much more difficult social interactions have become, being so busy with work and enjoying her own space and independence. Eve's social circles had already reduced considerably before her illness, but now everything to do with social interactions was harder.
When you go to social gatherings, you find yourself in an awkward position because you can't see people, so you can't approach them the way you want to approach. You're the one who has to sit down and wait to be approached. And unless somebody wants to see me or they take the initiative of coming to see me or coming to get me and going out with me, I don't think I can just go out on my own at the mall and have lunch. You know, I can't do those things anymore.
Just as Eve faces more barriers than ever to making and maintaining her social relationships, she's also become completely dependent on the goodwill of those closest to her.
I had to become very dependent economically and financially, and that broke my heart the hardest, because now you become a beggar because you keep asking people for help. I need money for credit. I need money for this, because now I'm not earning money. I'm not able to buy for myself those things. I'm having to relearn things again, and those things were so easy. I've lived a whole 30 something years doing things for myself, and now I can't even do basic things. I'm not wired to beg. I'm creative, I'm innovative. I know I can do these things. I know I used to do them, but now it's like my hands and legs are tied and I'm being told, no, you sit down there and rest. Wait to be given whatever you're given. And that broke my heart, because then I was not in charge of my life.
One of the things Eve talks about is how the sudden change in her fortunes, through nothing other than bad luck, has prompted her to think differently about those marginalized by disability in general.
Now my question becomes, what have the people who've never seen life, like people who've never had sight, these people have been shoved to a corner from the beginning. Mm-hmm. These people have been told to sit in that corner and make friends in their corner, so they are not part of the society, they are not part of the gatherings. They're always in their own corner. Mm. And that is the corner I'm being shoved at. Mm. And I'm like, it's not fair. I also want to go out and have fun. What is so wrong about that? Mm. We keep saying inclusivity and diversity, but the truth is, do we really include these people in our planning, in our planning of events? Do we really include people when we are constructing buildings, when we're making roads? No. We just make them for people who are sighted like the rest of us. So when I see those things and I realize I'm now part of them, the squad that has been shoved to a corner, I'm like, let me just explain that this is what it feels to be not part of the squad. This is how these guys have been feeling from the beginning.
It's hard to imagine how any of us would react to such a rapid, dramatic, irreversible change in fortunes. Eve recognized that she faced a psychological battle as well as the practical challenges of this new world.
At that time, as I'm being crushed by life, I'm also thinking, what else can I do? You know, I can't just sit down and say, I've been beaten by life. I can't just go down like this.
Can I ask you, how quickly did you get to that point? Because obviously you're taking in this enormous news, and then now you're trying to work out, how do you move forward?
I don't like feeling helpless for too long. Because if I do, then I'll crash. So I'm like, fine, this is happening. I'd cry at night. I'd wake up swollen eyes and my mom would ask me what's wrong. And I'm like, please don't ask me that question again, because you already know what's wrong. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm thinking, what else? How else can I jump back? This is not how I plan to go down. I'm still going to live the best life. That's now what I started telling myself.
Eve set about reinventing herself.
Maybe I'm going to be the first blind radio presenter in Kenya, or I'm going to have a podcast, or I'm going to have a YouTube channel. However this is going to land, my voice is going to be heard.
Eve's voice is being heard on her Twitter account, The Newly Blind Girl, and her YouTube channel, Blind Girl Experience, where she shares her experiences with nearly 5,000 followers.
This is where we talk about visual impairedness and all sorts of things.
As well as highlighting ways that she thinks attitudes or infrastructure in Kenya could be altered to make life easier for her and other blind Kenyans.
There are so many systems that are not working for us, not just even for visual.
The thing is, I had to find a purpose. Then I'm like, you know what? Let me share this story with as many people as possible. Some will get inspired. Some will know that they're not alone in this journey. So that's what I decided the channel should be, just telling people about my blind girl experience.
Of course, Eve's condition has not only been life-changing for her, but for her family as well.
For my sister, for her, I think was first shock, and then she says that I give her strength because I do not know how to wallow in my sorrow for long. So she's like, I think you are more stronger than the rest of us because you seem to have jumped back pretty like fast, and the rest of us are still thinking, oh my God, she's lost her sight, and how she's moving on with her life. Like, yeah, I lost my sight, but yeah, moving on swiftly. But she's learning through me, and she's always happy to share my experiences with whoever is willing to listen. And even her attitude towards like people who are visually impaired has changed because of me, because she's seeing what I'm going through. Now she's even spotting people in town who are visually impaired, and she's like, you know what? If she's in a position to be kinder, she is kinder. If she's in a position to help, she will help, because she's like, that could be my sister.
You had a very clear vision for your future, Eve. How has that vision changed now?
The vision has changed because, first of all, it's not about losing my sight. You see, yes, I lost my sight, but I almost lost my life. Mm-hmm. It was an issue with my brain. So the first thing I am glad to do is just be happy that I made it. I made it through that thin line of being alive and dying, because this would have gone completely the opposite direction. I'm just taking it a day at a time and a step at a time. Some days you don't even touch the phone. Some days you just sit outside on a chair and listen to birds tweeting and all that. And friends were coming to visit me when they found out this has happened and it's become permanent. They would come visit. So that kind of gave me something to look forward to, because when they say they're coming on Saturday, I'd look forward to Saturday. And talking to people every now and then gave me some hope. You know, I'm like, okay, I'm not alone in this.
Thanks for listening to The Comb. This episode was produced by Mary Goodhart, Aisha Afra, and me, Kim Chakanetsa. The sound design is by Rob Wilson. Pierce Lynch is our editor. Our studio manager is Tom Ward. Next week on The Comb, memory and justice in the Gambia.
You know, when my father disappeared, many people turned their backs on us or did not come near us. It's like you have something that is contagious. You're also made to feel guilty. And I know that was the case for other women, where it's like, well, they must have done something if they were forcibly disappeared, you know? As if that's justification for that.